I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello and welcome along to the latest episode of the Home Show podcast. I'm your host, Sinead Ryan. Coming up this week, while we couldn't have an Easter show without lots of chocolate, we'll be chatting to some Irish chocolate makers and someone in studio will be sampling their wares. The government has announced yet another plan on modular homes. We'll catch up on that. If you're serving Easter lamb for Sunday dinner, well, Nevin Maguire will be in with top tips on that and cheaper alternatives. And Home Show regular Jennifer Sheehan on the psychology of incorporating Easter yellow into your home decor. If you'd like to get in touch with the Home Show podcast, we are available throughout the week at thehomeshow@newstalk.com on email, and you'll find me, Sinead Ryan, on Instagram and on X. For all the chocolate lovers out there, it is even better than Christmas. With Easter weekend comes the end of Lent and the joy that a molten egg can bring. But quality can vary. And if you're someone who prefers something really special over the mass-produced supermarket offerings piled high on the shelves, well, we have you covered on the Home Show. Joining me in studio now are Caoimhe Connolly of Hazel Mountain Chocolate in Galway and from Butler's Chocolate, Aisling Walsh. And you're both very welcome to the Home Show studio, ladies. You have come with an array of chocolate here, and it absolutely is mouth-watering. But I want to start, Aisling, with you. What do you think? Look, you've been making chocolate at Butler's for a very, very long time now. It is a very well-known and popular Irish brand. What is it about chocolate that we absolutely love?
Well, you're quite right. We're around a long time. We're around since 1932, so we know a thing or two about making chocolate. And I guess the thing that makes our chocolate and quality chocolate unique, it's all about the ingredients. So you've got to start with something amazing in the first place. If you're a chef and you're making something at home, if you don't start with good ingredients, you're not going to end up, no matter how good you are. So we use the finest quality chocolate. We have our own recipes for our milk, dark and white, high percentage of cocoa solids, hugely important. So we get great base ingredients, and then it's what we do with them that really adds the magic. So you have the chocolate bases, but then our chocolatiers are working up incredible recipes to fill the chocolates and make them quite unique. Lots of unique different flavours for us, Irish flavours that work really well and work over time. And of course, we evolve the flavours and tastes as people's tastes change. For example, things like salted caramel, hazelnut, pistachio, all of these flavours, perennial flavours, and we just keep moving them on.
And look, they're strong flavours because chocolate of itself, just a square of good chocolate, has a strong flavour. So trying to match up the inside with that can be quite a challenge, I'd say, because you can't have it overpowering the chocolate, but at the same time, people expect a different hit.
And exactly, and that's where the expertise comes in. So we might have an idea for a chocolate with maybe orange or mint, but it's getting the exact right percentage of the flavour to put in. So there's a lot of tweaking, a huge amount of work goes on behind the scenes before something's actually ready to hit our cafes.
Right, a lot of testing going on there, Caoimhe. I suppose you're exactly the same. You're over in the Burren and you're creating chocolate. That also has to have that mix, but is also, you know, really beautifully decorated. You've brought in some of your products here and there's a lot of work, it seems to me, going into it.
There is so much work. And I think what's very unique about Hazel Mountain Chocolate is that we actually process cacao beans on site into chocolate. So we're doing the bean to bar process all the way from, we're starting from the fermented cocoa bean and then we roast it. And it's all happening behind the glass. So every person coming through the door, they're seeing the whole process, not just kind of melting chocolate and flowing through the chocolate factory. So because of that, for us, there's that extra element of producing the chocolate on site. So there's a lot of elements that we kind of have to mind. And of course, then decoration and working with the fillings and different toppings. But for us, it's really about the chocolate first, and then the filling is the complementary to the chocolate.
Yeah, and that's why you have to get that absolutely right. Yeah. There's no point in having the nailing the filling and then having that icky aftertaste on the chocolate itself. All right. Well, listen, you've brought in loads. Aisling, talk to me about the difference, the white, the milk and the dark. Where do Irish people land there?
It's interesting you say that. So over recent years, we've seen, in terms of bar sales, people are buying more and more dark chocolate bars. Okay. But when it comes to Easter, we are a nation of milk chocolate
lovers. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We do. And like because we have our own stores, we're very responsive to people's change and taste and demand. But so over 80% of our Easter eggs will be milk chocolate this year.
Milk chocolate.
Milk chocolate.
Now, am I right in thinking that the white chocolate is a bit of a misnomer? Like, it's not really chocolate in the sense that there aren't, or are there, cocoa beans in it?
It's quite clear on the EU have a rule on cocoa butter amount in white chocolate.
Okay. So
the minimum amount of cocoa butter should be 20%. We have 26% in our white chocolate, which makes it just that lovely extra bit
creamy. And you
and
get the creamy.
Quite delicious. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think it's enough talking. Enough talking. It's time to start eating. What do we have here? Now, Kasia, this is a little Easter wreath. Now, we have covered Easter wreaths on the Home Show before. We've had florists in and designers in. I wouldn't put this near my front door. We're going to eat it. Right? Talk to me about that.
Well, I wanted to create something because Easter is such a big thing for kids and there's so much, it's such a joyful time for them, but I wanted to create something for adults, for grown-ups. So if I'm coming to your home during Easter time, I want to create something that, you know, I can give it to you that looks pretty and it tastes amazing. So this is something you don't put on the door, you put it on the table and hope it lasts.
Right. And you have pistachio here. Now, Aisling, you mentioned pistachio as well. We've kind of got notions about now what we want with our chocolate. The pistachio is a big one, isn't it? Do you find that?
It's still, you know, there's
a lovely foil with it.
Yeah, pistachio is I think it's the kind of fancy nut. And we do love pistachio. Yeah.
But I think
nuts and chocolate in general are great bedfellows. Yeah. They always have been.
Do we feel we're getting one a day, one of our five a day if we have a couple of nuts in there as well? All right, okay. Let's start with the dark because that's my favourite. So,
this
is Kasia.
I'm going to pass it over to you. So, what's really interesting when you taste it, our dark chocolate, because.
Good snap.
Yeah.
Isn't that what we want?
Because we roast cocoa beans on site and they're really good quality, we treat them with dignity. So, we don't burn them, we don't over roast them. And the bitterness that people associate with dark chocolate, that's actually coming from the fact that the beans are being burned. And that happens in the mass production. So what we do is we treat them with very little heat and to preserve all the beautiful flavours. So there's intensity of the dark chocolate, but no harsh bitterness.
That's very, very rich. I must say, one square of that is going to kind of last you a long time.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing, I suppose, if you don't want to keep going and eating it. Now, Aisling, you mentioned milk chocolate was going to be a big seller.
Well, it always is.
Always is. Why do you think that is? Is it just the indulgence of we can eat more of it, maybe?
I think we like it, but also I think maybe a lot of us grew up on eating milk chocolate, but as the market has developed, our tastes have developed. So within milk chocolate, there's lots of varying grades as well. So we do like a 32% as our base milk chocolate. We also have a 40% bar, which is unbelievably
cocoa-y. That's a lot for milk, actually. But so that's lovely.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
My personal favorite.
Okay. So. Now, talk to me. So we have here.
So this is a very, very special limited edition. In fact, we're all sold out and this was made especially for you yesterday at the factory. It is
fantastic.
The freshest egg you can imagine.
This is, so let me describe this because the packaging is beautiful and I'm going to come on to packaging in a minute. This is a half egg.
Yes. So this is totally handmade by our chocolatier. So it's a half egg, a milk chocolate egg made in a half. Then it's painted again with more milk chocolate and then in by hand are added lots of little chopped hazelnuts and it all sets. It is utterly divine.
That looks absolutely beautiful. And for somebody who doesn't want the kind of piled high loads of chocolate, wouldn't you prefer something perfect and small that tastes amazing rather than, you know, all the mass produced stuff in the world. Absolutely. That's absolutely beautiful. Chocolatier's edition. And you also have then, tell me what you have here.
We have some dark, we'd be well known for our range of wrapped eggs. They're super pretty eggs, which have all had a glow up this year. So we have a dark egg and it comes in very recyclable packaging with and accompanied for to enjoy later when you've had the egg, 70% mini chocolate bars.
Deep velvet. Oh, I have to give this a go then. All right. Good. So that's absolutely gorgeous. And is it harder to work with one type of chocolate over another, do you think? Or are they, once you have the temperature right, they're all the same?
It's all about the temperature, yeah. And the expertise of the people making them as well, yeah. But the temperature. Mm. But the temperature is the big thing.
Carry on among us. That's absolutely gorgeous. It is. Can anything go wrong, Kasia, when you're working with chocolate?
Oh my gosh. So many things. So chocolate is very sensitive to the moisture in the air, to the temperature. So there's many elements that will affect the chocolate tempering, what it looks like. Yeah. Mm.
Now, you're out on the Wild Atlantic Way and you have a Wild Atlantic Easter egg.
Yeah,
Talk to me about that.
We were inspired by the true wilderness of where we are. We've had this Easter egg for the last couple of years and these are hand-painted.
Painted wave on it.
Yeah, it's a big wave crashing over the rocks.
Very, very pretty.
Yeah.
Do people love the whole packaging thing? It's so important, isn't it, the way it's the presentation of eggs this time of year. It's kind of half of the kind of joy that you get out of it, isn't it?
It is, but also because we do have our shop in the factory in County Clare and in Galway, we do discover now that customers are really looking for information. They're very specific. What is this made of? Does it have palm oil? So while the packaging is really important because we buy visually, there is a lot more awareness now about chocolate and it's being reflected in the customers. What questions they ask.
And that's the sustainability piece.
Yeah.
Because people want to know what they're putting, you know, they're spending quite a lot of money on a luxury brand and a luxury product and they want to know what's in it and what they're gifting. You've had some very famous visitors to Hazel Mountain.
We have. We had Joe Manganiello. He first visited with Sofia Vergara, his ex-partner. And he came second time last year when he came for an NFL game in Dublin and he requested the driver to bring him especially to Hazel Mountain Chocolate.
You have a fan there.
We had Brendan Gleeson a couple of times, Nicola Coughlan, Miranda Lambert, who's a massive country singer in America. So there's been a lot coming to the door.
Yeah, and it's a universal thing, Aisling, isn't it, chocolate? I mean, everywhere in the world, every country, I mean, it's lasted thousands of years for a reason.
It has.
What more innovation can we expect in the chocolate world?
Well, I guess there's innovation on all sides. So there is, as you mentioned, the sustainability. And just one thing, I think the headline in terms of sustainability for the industry this Easter has been palm oil. And so while we as a company would have looked at palm oil 10, 12 years ago, and we have zero palm oil in anything for many years, I think now in terms of consumer awareness, it is the hottest topic this Easter. So I think that is
really. So you're both saying that now. And 100%. That's just people are just like, I'm not going there. I don't want to see it anywhere because it takes so much to produce, doesn't it?
Yeah, so people, I think, are really supporting brands this Easter that have a zero tolerance policy to palm oil. So sustainability is huge. Sustainably sourced cocoa. Packaging is a hugely important part of what we do. And obviously, for Easter eggs, it's a necessary thing because they can break. But it's moving on with trends, colours and packaging, looking to fashion for new things coming along. But then also looking to the food industry at large and seeing what flavours are coming through in dessert chefs, and just taking inspiration.
Well, listen, I must say, some people would say you both have the dream job because you have to do a lot of tasting to make sure it's right. But I imagine that smell when you go into work every single day must be absolutely knock your socks off. It's fantastic.
It is.
Well, look, we appreciate you taking the time out at this busiest time of year to join us on the home show. It's lovely seeing all of the Irish produced chocolate and artisan products that are going out. And listen, we'll still be picking up our chocolate with our coffee in the cafes as well, Aisling, because that's one of our probably one of the best USPs that an Irish company have. People absolutely love it and you can try different bits out. Okay, Kat, you have a YouTube channel, is that right?
I have a YouTube channel that got inspired by I think it's the element of where we are. It's beautiful landscape. We're between Galway Bay and the Burn Mountains and there's that element of unexpectedly finding this chocolate factory and people are just so curious. They come and they open up. So it just really inspired me to create a YouTube show where I cook something in my own kitchen, bring it over to the chocolate factory in exchange for amazing stories that people tell tell us. And we get about 250,000 visitors every year. So for a small chocolate factory in the middle of nowhere in the Irish countryside.
That's called Food for Stories. All right. Well, listen, my thanks to Cash Connolly from Hazel Mountain Chocolate and Aisling Walsh from perennial Irish favourite Butlers that everybody knows and loves. And thanks a million for joining us on The Home Show.
The Home Show on News Talk. The Home Show on News Talk.
We are staying with the Easter theme here. And if all that chocolate before the break has whetted your appetite, well, hold off until after dinner. A leg of lamb is the traditional choice for the Easter table. But with meat becoming ever more expensive, it's important to get it just right or find a less expensive alternative. And who better to ask than Nevin Maguire, McNean House in Cavan. Nevin, welcome to
good
the Home
morning.
Show.
Good morning. So good to be here. Thank you.
Now, so let me talk to you about the lamb. It is the traditional meat. Will you be serving lamb at your Easter table?
Oh, absolutely.
You go for it
lamb
every year.
Lamb is popular. We have it on at the in the restaurant at the minute. We have the rump of lamb, but the leg of lamb people love.
They do.
It's gorgeous.
They do. It is beautiful. And I've seen a lot of the supermarkets now and butchers have started selling a half leg of lamb.
Clever.
If you have a smaller family, you know, because it is expensive, isn't
and
it?
And what I like to do is to get your butcher to butterfly it. That means to take the bone out because it cooks much quicker. People get nervous carving and slicing.
Yes.
Things that work really well with a leg of lamb is garlic, rosemary.
Yeah.
It's very versatile. You can put a lot of spices like cumin, paprika, all those flavours will work really well. Good olive oil. And if you marinate it overnight in the fridge, but then the key is to bring it to room temperature. Don't cook it straight from the fridge for about 40 minutes to 45 minutes. And then in a really good hot oven with lots of roasted vegetables, red onion, more garlic, some rosemary, a little bit of red wine or stock. You're going to have the most succulent, glorious piece of lamb.
Absolutely gorgeous. And I think people worry, I worry about getting the butterfly only because I think the bone, I always believe the bone gives you that kind of extra moisture,
does it? Yeah.
So, but it can be tricky to get around. It's a hefty, it's a hefty piece in the middle. And of course, you're paying for it then, you know.
Well, that's true.
Charge for the weight.
That is true. And like lamb this time of year, the spring lamb is expensive, but it is glorious. And it's, listen, it's Easter Sunday, so let's make the most of it.
It's a special day. It's a special day. Okay. Now, I didn't realise, by the way, you were one of such a large family. There's nine of you.
There is, yeah. Five boys and four girls.
And, like, listen, they must be delighted there's a chef in the family.
Well,
do you cook for them
They
all?
Never tell me that, but you see, we've grown up with food. Like, I got the love of food from my mother from the age of 12. I wanted to be a chef. And, you know, I just love what I do, Sinead. And from the age of 12, I knew I wanted to be a chef. I was the first boy to do home economics. Yeah. Cooking and food was my life when we grew up with food. So our mother and dad, you know, we ate as a family and enjoyed good food. So, and a lot of my sisters and brothers, they're great cooks too.
Are they?
Yeah, they
okay,
are. Yeah.
That's good. So you can divvy out the jobs and make sure everybody brings something.
Right,
all right,
I'm a good delegator.
Now, where is it that people go wrong with roasts? I like, because it's an Irish staple, everybody loves them. If you ask anybody what their favourite dinner is, they'll usually actually it's the Sunday roast. But is it the kind of trying to get everything together on time? Is that the hardest bit?
It is. I think the thing is not to overcomplicate it. Two simple vegetables like glazed carrots, cut them, peel them, cut them, pre-boil them or steam them, finish them with butter, a little bit of maple syrup. That's what I do. Some nice frozen peas. You could put a little bit of smoked bacon in. It's perfect this time of year. And that's two simple veg. And then a nice buttery mash. You don't need having three or four different potatoes.
Yeah.
So it's all about just being prepared. Like if you do a potato gratin, that can be made now today and served over tomorrow or the next Easter Monday. You know, which is absolutely gorgeous.
Okay.
So you can just be a little bit organised and don't stress. I wouldn't go for too many, you know, starters. I'd concentrate on the main course and then shave your Easter egg afterwards and your chocolate dessert afterwards.
Exactly, yeah. Molten lava.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so for those then that just want the slightly less expensive option, which can also be delicious, I have been definitely using shoulder of lamb for a very long time now, you know, with a kind of like a harissa rub on it or something.
Oh.
But it does take longer. Now, you have to give it time, don't you?
See, a lot of people might have slow cookers, Sinead. So what you could do is kind of brown it off.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, get lots of lovely spices, a little bit of stock and slow cook it. It's a glorious piece. The shoulder lamb boned and rolled and it gets a nice shape. So it does, and serve a buttery mash like it is.
And
like,
it just comes away on the fork, doesn't it?
It really melts in the mouth. And if you cook that, say, for, say, I said 3 to 4 hours in the slow cooker, even more, you're just kind of a beautiful piece of meat. Serve it a little bit of couscous. You you can get that lovely kind of like interest and flavour and textures, and as I say, different spices work really well in that sort of thing.
And enough left over for the shepherd's pie then.
Oh,
the
that's
next
it
day. Is that it?
You see, you're a great woman. You see, you have to plan like that.
You do, and when you've got it, when you're cooking for a family, I mean, you know, this is an expensive piece of meat. Mm-hmm. You want to make it go and make it last, so you know, you might as well.
And get as much out of it as you're absolutely right. So yeah,
great.
That'd be gorgeous.
Now I have a vegetarian with me, and that's fine. We're happy with that. Give me something special that we can help her with.
A risotto is hard to beat. It's a one pan dish. The rice is arborio rice. You cook a little bit of onion, garlic. Your arborio rice, white wine goes in there, and a primavera, which is like lots of vegetables. We're coming to spring. You can use the peas, carrots, courgettes. Now will be coming in season. So and a little bit of peppers in there too. So there's lots of lovely fresh. That's it. Lemon zest, a juice finishes lovely. A little bit of mascarpone and a really good Parmesan cheese is the key. 30 months old is the key, or even older than that, because it's richer, it's saltier, and it's really, really beautiful. It's a one pan dish. And if you've leftover risotto, because I like your way of thinking, you can make the arancini balls. So what does that mean? So your cold risotto, you roll it up like a little snowball, smaller, a potato scoop, say, and then you flour egg a breadcrumb in breadcrumbs, and then just pop them into the air fryer, and away you go. Making you hungry, am
you're
I?
You're getting an extra dinner. Everybody's getting extras. It's been padded out. It'll be Easter by Wednesday.
I think that's a calf and blood in it, I think.
I think you're right. I think, now, of course, one of the sides, you were talking there about keeping the glazed carrots and the peas simple, and I'm 100% on board with that. But one of the things that I've found has migrated into the Irish roast is the Yorkshire pudding. Like, where is that? Now, I know, like, in England, like, they have their Sunday roast, and they would say, no, it's ours, not yours. But the Yorkshire pud has become popular.
Huge.
Is it?
Huge popular. My brother-in-law loves it. So you get beef dripping, kind of like a muffin tray.
Yeah.
You make up a batter. So that's just with some full-fat milk, a little bit of flour, plain flour, by the way, a couple of eggs, a little bit of salt, and really hot beef drippers. You got to have the tray hot, and then it puffs up. And they're lovely. Like, I like them. Do I love them? I'd rather roast potato or a bit of buttery mash, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But some, I think kids love them. The element that they rise and they're soft and they're like
And you can pour the gravy into
the one.
Them.
Yeah.
Isn't that it?
Exactly.
I love it. Yeah, okay, fantastic. Now, you are going to be appearing at the PTSB Ideal Home Show in the live theatre.
Yes.
I think Dunn's is involved in that. Now that's on in 2 weeks' time, so it's the 24th of April weekend. What will you be doing there?
So I'll be doing some lovely recipes. So this is, I think it's maybe my fifth or sixth year doing it. It's a fantastic show. It's a great family event, and you meet so many of the regulars that come. They're diehard fans, so they are. So my role at Simply Better is talking about the produce, showing some lovely recipes. So I'm going to be doing like a chicken and chorizo, a kind of rice bake, lovely cheesecake, tiramisu tray bake. It's a lemon and blueberry kind of like £1 or £2 loaf tin. Like, so a little bit of bacon, a couple of wee simple starters. So people can come and get inspiration. They'll all get a recipe. And then with Simply Better, there's going to be food producers there. So they'll be giving out some of their lovely produce. Mm. So I think it's a fantastic fun show.
Do you enjoy those? Do you love the kind of that interaction with an audience?
It makes it for me, so it does.
Yeah.
And for me, it's about, Sinead, when you meet people who are my customers in the restaurant, but also they're interested in food, there's a great connection there. And when kids are there, like, that's a beautiful thing to see young people sitting there, like, come to my demonstrations, because there'll be myself, Donald Skeen, there'll be Brian McDermott, Aidan Cox. So there's a great selection and great variety too. It's not just all me, it's about the Dunn's team. Like, I get great interaction with people. And then I'll also do my own small little masterclasses on my own. I have an area where I have my own cookware, and I'll be doing maybe sticky cocktail sausages. They'll get a taste, but they can see me actually using the equipment and the pots, pans, knives. One of the most asked questions: how do you cook the perfect steak? How do you chop an onion? And pots, pans and knives. It never changes.
It's the basic stuff, isn't it?
Is.
Because if you get that right, the other stuff flows from that. You can make a mistake early on and it can throw you. Do you find them at all stressful, Nevin? I mean, you're running a kitchen in a top restaurant. Nothing beats the stress of that and putting it out every day. But that live, is there a tiny thing in the back of your mind saying, is the oven on?
Yeah. Well, I'm lucky. That's a very good point. I have a great assistant, Claire Beasley. She's been with me now for 15 years, so she keeps an eye on that. But it's like 1 year, the induction hob wouldn't work. So you just have it. But that's okay. You work it. We got it working and there's no problem. We went on the gas or something like that. But you just got to think quick in your feet. And then if you put a live mic out and you ask questions, like, you can get any questions, so you can. So
you
that's
don't know
a bit of fun.
What's gonna come
exactly.
Up.
Yeah. But I do love that. I mean, like, people will sit, watch. I'd say they're all starving to watch to go maybe and get food after it. Yeah. But it's that engagement that they can see alive. And we don't keep them too long. When I say that, it's about 40 minutes each cookery demonstration.
And do you find with people, like, it's not like, you know, okay, there's an argument that's saying if you can read a recipe, you can cook. But isn't it really the confidence piece?
Isn't it
just, I'm afraid if something goes wrong or I can't do that, I don't know what else to do. I don't know what the next step is.
People get very stressed. You know, I think about getting the basics right, as you said, and that's what I try and show them. The recipes are very simple, using great products and great produce. And that's what Simply Better does.
Yeah.
Like, I'm with them 10 years and I've learned so much as a chef, truthfully, about cleanness, about supporting Irish produce. Also, they have an Italian collection and a Spanish collection, and I've met so many of these producers, so I'm learning all the time. So when I meet the producer, I can tell the audience or whoever's watching you about, this is who I met, this is how they make it, and they love to hear that
because
there's a connection there. So there is.
And I suppose when you have really good ingredients and you don't faff about with them too much, you know, you're not trying to be adding in 40 kind of different ingredients. You don't need to do that because if you have it.
I don't cook like that at home. I keep it very simple. I have twins and they're 14 and they're eating food that I wasn't eating when I was 14. But that's a beautiful thing to see them enjoying food.
Do they cook?
Oh, yeah.
Are they?
Connor loves to cook. Lucia kind of does a wee bit of bacon. So it's very interesting. Twins, they're very different
very
dynamics.
Very useful. Useful children. I like it.
Future chefs.
Come here to me. People love the Dunn Stores collab that you have, Nevin. You've been a long time at it. They love the chopping boards and the pots and pans. What utensil is the one that they gravitate towards, or what like bit do you feel
knives.
People get, is it?
Knives and pans, definitely.
Okay.
And like, just for your listeners, like, I test everything, you know, like in the cookery school, in my restaurant. So, you know, when Mrs. Heffernan came to you and said, you know, we want you to do a cook range, I said, okay, if it's not good enough for you to use in your cookery school and it's not affordable for my customers, we won't be selling it. So when I heard that, I said, that's amazing from Mrs. Heffernan. Fantastic. What an incredible lady. So we do, and we've about 130, 140 products in the range. So it's a huge range.
Many.
It has, and it's growing, so it has. Plates, knives, chopping knives, obviously, glassware. So the whole serving and all, we're adding to it all the time.
Yeah.
But your basics, pots, pans, knives, that's what people want.
Okay. And of course, the knife thing is really important to keep them sharp, because it sounds obvious, but I think a lot of homes, mine included, has blunt knives or knives that just aren't kept quite right.
Well, a blunt knife is more dangerous than a sharp knife. And funny enough, like at the Ideal Homes, I show people how to sharpen knives.
Okay.
I have this diamond steel sharpener, part of my collection, and just showing people how to do that. If you do that once every week, 2 weeks, depending on how often you use your knives, and if you look after them, you'll have them for a very, very long time.
You'll keep it going.
Yeah, exactly. Keep it going.
Okay, well, sure, Duns have Nevin down in the kitchen, Francis up in the bedroom. You can't go wrong.
You couldn't make it up. We're going to have some fun.
You will. And listen, the PTA, you can find Nevin and all the other chefs and presenters at the PTSB Ideal Homes in the RDS on the weekend of the 24th, 26th of April. And you can get tickets at idealhome.ie. Nevin, thanks a million. It's been
lovely,
an absolute joy having you in,
happy
as
Easter.
Always. And happy Easter
you.
To you. And I hope all your plans go well. They will, of course, go right. Oh, I hope the rest of our plans go right.
Don't stress. Keep it simple and enjoy with your family and friends.
All right. Listen, that's fantastic. Thanks a million for
joining
us on The Home Show. Now, another day, another housing initiative. Just when we thought the back garden cabins were off the table, they're back, just in time for Granny to move in. Well, here to tell us more about this latest press release from the Department of Housing is Newstalk's political correspondent, Sean Defoe. Sean, welcome to studio. This is kind of about planning tweaks, is it? And tax, rather than the law about mobile homes in the back garden.
Yeah, it's a bit of all three, I suppose, really. So this is planning exemptions for new modular homes out the back that are up to 45 square metres in size, with a couple of other conditions going to be tagged on. For example, you'll have to have 25 square metres of garden space still available to you, and there will have to be a separate side entrance for anyone who's living in that. So if you're in a terraced house, for example, this won't be for you. You'd have to have an alleyway or something that they could get access to the back of the house. And ultimately, they will be brought under the remit of the rent-a-room scheme, which allows people to get €14,000 a year tax-free if they are renting out to someone. And the reason they're doing it that way is to basically avoid it being in the wider rental rules and all these rental rules that they changed at the start of March. So it's going to be under that very specific scheme. And there's been a lot of dickying back and forth between ministers and the AG over it.
Yes, because under the new rules, which we covered last week with the Residential Tenancies Board, you have to offer a tenancy for up to 6 years as a minimum. So if somebody now has a modular home in the back garden, you're saying that doesn't come in within that. It'd be like as if they are in a bedroom in your own home.
Yeah, that's my understanding of it. It'll be like similar to the existing scheme where you can do this if it's a bedroom in your own home or if you've got an extension tagged on or a garage that is tagged on to the house that is converted. Okay. This is just taking that but applying it to standalone modular buildings.
Right. Now, a lot of families will be kind of deciding then if there's a commercial aspect to getting hold of one of these and opening it up. Because crucially, my understanding of the rent-a-room scheme is that if you charge your kids rent to live there, you can't claim that under the rent-a-room scheme, because that's just like parenting 101. You're supposed to be doing that likewise, granny.
Although a lot of some parents do charge rent. I was charged rent as soon as I started earning. But anyway.
No problem. You just can't get it tax-free.
Yeah. So
this is kind of, who's the market here, Sean? Is it like getting people off the housing list and sticking them in the back garden, or what?
It's a little bit, so the rules around family do relate to children, but not other family members. So if it's a niece or a nephew or whoever, you know, you could do that, or granny, as you were saying at the start, you could maybe think about that. So there's a few different elements. One is a commercial aspect to it, that maybe people who have the space will want to earn a little bit of income and might take in a lodger. And I think we've seen, I think was there a doubling of the number of people using the rent-a-room scheme between 2022 and now. So people are using it already quite a bit to supplement their own income and to provide housing. And there's definitely a market for that. The risk there is, we can go into it a bit more if you like, is when people try to take advantage of the commercial aspect and they're not building good quality modular accommodation, that it is the bed in a shed, as the opposition have said quite a bit. Another is, look, there's a lot of people out there who do want to downsize and are finding it difficult. And there's this weird thing happening at the moment where I went to a launch of a new build estate, and half the people there were retirees who were trying to get out of maybe the 4 or 5 bed family house and find a duplex apartment. Cash buyers who are then competing with first time buyers on the other end who maybe have the advantage of the different schemes, but are, you know, competing against someone who can just go straight away. It's very difficult.
Okay, so politically now then, is everybody on board with this? Does Sinn Féin love it? Is Labour saying this is the answer that we've been looking for?
No. You'd be shocked to hear the opposition are opposing this. So there's even a bit of dickying back and forth within Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. The overall idea the government is supportive of, but some are wondering about, for example, you know, one TD raised the question of, could you only earn 14 grand a year if you're doing it under this scheme and not the wider market? Because, of course, 14 grand a year would be what, I'm trying to do my maths off the top of my head, but about 1,200-ish. Yeah. And a lot of people would earn more than that for worse accommodation, unfortunately, out there at the minute. So there is a little bit of a question mark over that, but it will go to Cabinet in coming weeks. The opposition are against it, and largely for the point that I made there before, they're calling it the bed in a shed. They're saying that a lot of these modular homes, and, you know, I've seen some of them, are way better than a few of the places I rented in my time, I can tell you that much. But if they're done properly, and the fear is you will, as with every government scheme, you'll have people who will take advantage, who will put up poor quality, not well insulated, and then charge 1,200 quid a month.
Well, we have found out the last time we covered this item, when they announced that the wheeze about allowing modular homes in the back garden, we asked bankers, we asked lenders, are you going to be able to get a mortgage on this? And the universal answer was absolutely not, because the person buying it doesn't have the title for the piece of land underneath it, and who owns it, and where does it come in? So a lot of these homes can cost like €100,000, according to the people we interviewed in the Home Show, to kit it out properly, have it fully insulated, have it hooked up to water and heat services, put a solar panel on it. It's not inexpensive. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it sounds to me like it's not for everyone.
No. Definitely not for everyone. And I think this is part of the problem with things we talk about when we look at the housing sector, is every idea that's put out there is seen as the panacea. It's not. It's a part of the jigsaw that might suit some people. Yeah. It might suit you if you have an acre out in the country and you're looking for space for a relative and you can put it there and not be in anyone's face. If you're in an estate, it might not. There's the money aspect. I mean, if you are buying it for your own property and you own the back garden and all that sort of stuff, maybe you might be able to get a loan. I just looked up before we came in, if you weren't getting a mortgage, if you got a 5-year loan, which is the max that places like Bank of Ireland will do for, say, 75 grand, you'd build a decent one, you're still paying 1,500 a month back And a lot of people might look at that and go, well, actually, they almost cancel each other out and I'll probably have this for 20, 30 years. Over the long term, I'll make money on it.
Yeah.
But unlike
a solid house, it's a depreciating asset.
Well, it depends on the one you go for. So lots of the modular home builders will tell you these things will last 40, 50 years.
They'll,
you know, and in that time, even with a bricks and mortar house, you'd have to do it up. Some of the cabin ones would be maybe 20, 30 years. You still have, if you get it built right, a decent window. But, you know, it isn't like it's going to be there forever.
All right. Well, we'll stay alert to it. Wouldn't be digging a hole just yet until we have more information. And Sean Defoe, political correspondent with News Talk. Thanks a million for joining us on
the
show.
The Home Show on News Talk. The Home Show on News Talk.
Now, we are keeping our Easter theme going in our designer's slot this week by incorporating, well, I think that most difficult of colours into our interiors. Yellow has made a comeback on the catwalk, but it does take a certain personality to pull it off successfully. Let's find out if that's also true for decor with former Home of the Year winner and Home Show regular Jennifer Sheehan. Welcome to the Home Show, Jenny. Yellow can be a bit Marmite. Where do you stand?
It's my favourite. Favourite colour. It's my number one favourite. And I love it this time of year. I love Easter in general. I say this all the time, no presents, no visiting, no hosting dinners, chocolate all weekend. I love it. But I also love that drive. If anyone is heading west or driving around the country and the skies are blue and all that gorgeous gorse or furs is out and there's just yellow on either side of the road. And I love it.
And of course, we've all the daffodils growing in parks.
Daffodils, the primroses.
Beautiful.
I mean, it's heaven.
Okay. All right.
I love it.
That's outdoors. Now, a little bit harder.
You bring the daffodils inside and then you're done. That's it.
And do you know what? That is as far as I'm afraid that's as far as I go with yellow.
Yeah.
I love it in the garden. I've planted yellow tulips. I got them ready budded, so like really lazy option. But actually popping them into pots, it just gives you that gorgeous lift of spring. It just, you know, irrespective of the weather. So it is cheerful and it is bright. Irish homes tend, and Irish light, even this time of year, tends not to be cheerful and bright. So that can kind of sometimes, I think, change the hue.
Yes, yeah.
Of what you get.
Of course it can. So we tend to get a very grey light typically because we have mostly grey skies. And whatever colour we put in our house is viewed then, it's changed by that grey colour. So we do need to lean into warm colours typically, or at least kind of richer colours, and it's that's a good option. And so then we defaulted as a nation to magnolia. Everybody remembers magnolia.
Are we calling that?
We had magnolia
yellow,
walls.
It's on the yellow spectrum.
It's on
is
the
it
yellow
creamy?
Spectrum.
Yeah.
It's kind of a creamier, buttery colour. And what happens is it, on large walls, it just tends to look like a bit of an accident, a bit smoke stained. And I don't hate it. I actually love it on external walls. I think it's lovely on kind of older houses. But inside, it just doesn't work that well. And I think for yellows, that can be very, very true. It's not meant to be an overwhelming, all-surrounding, all-encompassing colour. We're used to seeing it in nature, you know, in the sky, sometimes we get a bit of a shock, but we do see it, you know, as those kind of bursts.
It's been a while.
It's been a while, yeah. It's been a while. Well, fingers crossed for the rest of the weekend. But it's, you know, in those bursts, in those daffodils, in those primroses, in those kind of, you know, big sprays of gorse, it works well for us as an accent colour, I feel. And that does translate into interiors.
And there's no doubt it has an energy about it. You know, when you spot a splash of yellow, whether it's outdoors in nature or in a cushion cover or, you know, a painting, you are drawn to it. There's no doubt about it.
Totally.
Trying to do it on scale, I think, is probably the challenge there. But if you do love it, like where can you do that really well? And what end of the spectrum are we on?
Yeah, and it's different for everyone. So my first item that I picked for my house was a yellow couch. And I love it. Like it fills me with joy every day. I just love it so much. So, and what I discovered was when I looked at the couch, I'd seen it on, you know, it's from Finland Furniture, and I'd seen it and I was like, that's the one, I really want that one. But actually when I went and got the fabric sample for the couch, it was so much darker than I thought it was going to be. And I think that's something to bear in mind if you're putting yellow on any larger scale items, like your couch, like your rug, even like curtains, for example. It's it lean darker than you think, because if you go too bright, you're in kind of Ryanair yellow territory, and it's a bit, it can get quite harsh and garish. So I think it's better to lean into kind of the ochres, the mustards, and on a larger scale, they do give you that brightness, that joy, that optimism, even though they are in the darker end of that scale.
Yeah, and they're more forgiving, really, with the Irish light, aren't
they? Yeah, they are.
Because most of us are in, you know, houses that aren't perched on a Mediterranean coastline with the sunshine going in. But whether even if it's south-facing and in a lovely aspect, the light is white rather than blue. And, it can be harder to work it in. So I think you're right. That kind of ochre mustard end of that colour spectrum, rather than the primrose and the Easter bunny kind of colour.
Now, keep the sprays of primrose. So if you're, like, that's if you're talking about, you know, bigger items, couches, you know, curtains, as I said, bedspreads even, you know, big massive paintings, for example. I think it works well in darker colours. But if you love that really bright yellow, you can still really lean into that as an accent. You know, they're lovely as just a little, like a really bright vase every now and then, or a lovely cushion cover, or, you know, flowers are always a good idea because you can get rid of them if you don't like them. That works really well. You can go lighter for those kind of really bright pops.
Indeed, and real or kind of faux work really well in that. And of course, the master of kind of using the yellow and flowers in paintings was Van Gogh.
Van Gogh.
And actually, I don't know if you've been to the museum in Amsterdam, the Van Gogh Museum, where of course you see all the sunflowers and there are different emanations, the yellow chair painting, you know, beautifully done, absolutely fantastic, and all the merch in the shop, it's fabulous. But if you queue up outside, there's an apartment to the right, up high, it's like about fifth floor apartment of a block. And the owner has a permanent exhibition of sunflowers right in the window.
How beautiful.
And it's like a nod to that. And anytime I've gone there, because my daughter used to live there, it was there.
Yeah.
And, you know, if all else fails this weekend, two or three massive sunflowers in a large deep pot. You can't beat it.
No, it's so beautiful. And Van Gogh, actually, he's another famous painting back to interior, is called The Yellow House. So he rented rooms in this house, and the painting itself is really, really, you know, it's a bright, cheerful yellow. He's painted the whole house yellow. He's painted the whole street yellow. I think one thing you notice as well in all of his paintings with sunflowers and everything is that it always is against a blue backdrop. And that's true of what we see in nature as well, with the flowers against the blue sky, and that looks lovely. And that's what works really well with interior, is yellow paired with a blue. You know, if you're going for those ochres, those navies, or those mustards, pairing it with a really rich navy works beautifully well. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous combination.
Michael O'Leary was a trendsetter.
He
knew
what he was doing.
Now, pairing yellow.
Yeah.
So we do have to be careful, because it can look a little bit, if you use, I think, too many bright colours, it can look a bit circus tent, you know.
So, primary school.
Yeah. So if yellow is your key focus, if yellow is what you want your eye drawn to, are we then talking, Jenny, about neutralising the background, or can we, what colours can we incorporate?
Neutrals work really well. Neutrals are beautiful. So if there's a really good example, my favourite design example of this. If anyone is in Dublin, the Oslo Beauty Salons have a gorgeous, gorgeous, you know, really lovely wood, very, very natural wood. They kind of got white and off-white tiles. And then they have these little pops of yellow here and there. And it works really well. It's a beautiful, beautiful pairing. So I like that. It's a small amount of yellow that you're using in that case, because you don't want to overpower those neutrals. You can, you know, easily. But oaks, you know, those kind of lighter woods, they work really, really well. Lovely soft linens, those kind of off-whites, even kind of a grey, a warm grey. That looks fantastic. Then I said the navy, and that is my favourite, my number one. It's what I have in my own house. And again, we're going dark here. I think this is so nice, because if you lean into the lighter yellows, the brighter yellows and the bright blues, it's too much. It's overpowering, it's Ryanair, it's, you know, and there's nothing wrong. I'm a Ryanair
but
fan.
Actually, but if you don't have the Ryanair blue, if you go for like a real, like an oxblood, really deep navy or even teal, you can kind of get that look without it, you know, kind of doors to manual.
Yeah,
you know,
go dark. Yeah, go really dark.
It's to go really dark. Yeah. And even with the orange, with the yellow, go into the mustard range of the palate.
Yeah, the really ochery range. Yeah,
and,
I love it.
And then it really lifts it and you get something very kind of Regency Edwardian look.
Absolutely.
Which is much more, let me say, I don't know, grown up maybe, you know.
And then on that trend, another thing that I do really love is we're into kind of gold yellows and that can be really beautiful as you're into that kind of more sophisticated, elevated. That goes really nicely with some kind of plummy colours, kind of dusty, mauvey colours, even greens, it pairs very well.
Right.
There's one particular colour, I've used it a few times sparingly. I usually use it on kind of lower half walls or colour blocking, and it's called Goldfinch by Benjamin Moore. It's a paint and it is gorgeous. So if you really love yellow and you're like, how do I bring in more of it? Just Google that and have a look at the images and see what you think, because I think that's an interesting way to bring it in a more sophisticated, bit more refined
way. It kind of as a calm splash in the background rather than something jumping out like an Easter bunny at you.
Yeah, right. More muted but in a very elegant way. I love it.
And of course, we go back then to flowers because, you know, they are very attractive to pollinators and, you know, the yellow really attracts all kinds of early pollinators in the springtime. And I suppose that is the reason, maybe, that nature created daffodils and primroses and all of that. So having those, they're not expensive.
No, a bunch of sunflowers maybe on the upper end, but they're so beautiful. They do last quite a long time.
Yeah.
I'm not the best person to talk about foliage because I tend to kill everything.
Splashing the colours though against it. So if you have anything kind of on the yellow spectrum in your home, whether it's cushion or a wall or whatever, having yellow flowers somewhere else in the room, I think it kind of just pulls it all together.
It does. And there's a rule of thumb on this. If you're using splashes of colour or accent colours, have at least three. Have three of them. And, you know, don't just have cushions and maybe a vase. Have cushions, a vase and flowers. And something about the three really
interesting.
Our mind loves that.
Because when we've
done then.
When we've gardeners on the home show, they say exactly the same thing. Plant in threes or fives.
Yeah.
Don't plant a row of four things.
Yeah.
And it just gives you that little bit of interest and your eye just feels I'm at home.
It feels complete at three for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, we are complete on the home show now. Thank you so much for that. You have actually managed to kind of swerve me a little bit in the old yellow. So definitely looking at that again. Certainly the darker colours and, you know, that old adage, Jenny, of if you have a dark room, the trick is to go dark.
Lean into it, and not try and
we give the magnolia a rest. It had its moment.
Don't have
a long
to
moment.
Everything.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Now that's all we have time for on the latest episode of the Home Show podcast. Hope you enjoyed our Easter festive show, and my thanks to producer Aoife Breen, who will be sampling along with me some of that gorgeous chocolate that we had in on the show. Stephen McLoone was on sound, and we will get to do it all again next week. And I hope you have a lovely remaining Easter break and enjoy all that it brings. And we will see you next time on the Home Show Pod.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan. Saturday at 5 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.